Welcome to the Tennis Worthy podcast, brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame. I'm Chris Bowers, and today's guest was one of the biggest names in tennis, indeed in world sports, in the late 1980s and early 1990s. One of the most photographed players who even developed her own branded fragrance and signature scent. She became a legend on the court as well as off it, with a body of work that saw her become Wimbledon doubles champion in 1988, US Open singles champion in 1990, Wimbledon runner-up in 1991, and amassed 41 tour-level titles in total, all of which earned her induction into the International Tennis Hall of Fame. She is Gabriella Sabatini.
The first moment I realized when I touched a racket, I felt this is my love, my passion. I always say that one of the best things that happened to me in tennis is the fact that I was able to travel, to get to know different cultures, different places, get to know people. Having Steffi on the other side, you know that the match is not over until the last point. I'm happy that I was able to win a Grand Slam. There are no regrets. I think all you can ask from yourself is to give your best, and I did.
These days, Gabby glides seamlessly between bases in Argentina, Florida, and Italy. And it was while she was in Miami that I caught up with the Argentinian legend. Gabriella Sabatini, what do you think it is that makes someone a Hall of Famer?
Wow. Well, I think it's because of your achievements. Being part of the history of tennis, it's what a tennis player always dreams about, you know. And to be able to achieve that and be part of the Hall of Fame, it's probably the best thing that a tennis player could achieve.
What was it that made you realize you had a passion for tennis?
The first moment I realized when I touched a racket, I felt this is my love, my passion. Just everything about it. I just loved it from the first moment. I think it was something that it was inside of me. And one day I just had the opportunity to meet with that moment.
Did you know about tennis before you actually started it? Was it something you'd seen and you wanted to do? Or was it just love at first sight?
No, it was love at first sight. I was not exposed to tennis before. So when I was 6 years old, it was the first time that I was able to see live tennis and to be able to grab a racket and play some tennis.
So you started at six and you won your first junior tournament at eight. What was it that made you better than other kids of your age? Well, your age and a bit older. What was it that you were doing better than they were?
I think I had a talent already from the beginning with tennis. And I think also I had the mentality and I liked the competition very much. I didn't want to lose. So I think those things together, the passion, the competitive feeling, those things add up to who I was and why I was winning those tournaments so early.
So if you're playing at the age of 7 or 8 against somebody who's 10, 11, 12, what made you win those kind of matches when the age difference is very big at that stage?
I didn't think of that. I just felt like on the other side I had another girl similar to me, and all I care about was just was about my tennis and how well or how better I could play. And I will always focus on myself, not thinking who it was on the other side.
When you look at your junior career, I mean, you won the Orange Bowl at 13, you won the Roland Garros girls singles at 14, you were a Roland Garros semi-finalist in the main draw at 15. I mean, it all sounds like you had a very smooth passage from picking up a racket to winning the leading junior tournaments. But you must have had setbacks. I mean, what sort of setbacks did you have and how did you get over them?
Yeah, everything was very smooth. I mean, I did all those things in a very short time and very smooth, very natural. Yeah, at that moment I had experiences that were difficult but made me more mature, made me grow, and actually they helped me to be a better player. I remember on my first tour, junior tour, starting in South Africa and then in Europe, it was quite difficult because I was away from home. I was only 13 years old, and I remember I was with another player from Argentina, and we were traveling by train. We were missing our trains. At one point, I had ear infection. Then we didn't have a hotel set up, and lots of things happened to us when we were very little. But those things made me grow quite fast.
Do you ever have any memories from, I don't know, a train station where you're thinking this is terrible? Did the thought ever occur to you, do I really want this?
Yeah, that was really a test because we encountered many, many difficult moments. But I had no idea. It was my first time traveling by train. So I didn't know what we were facing, what was coming next. All I knew is that this was happening so we could reach the next tournament and play tennis. And that's where I was happy, you know, on the court.
There's a story that you would deliberately lose some semi-final matches because you were so shy that you dreaded speaking at trophy presentation ceremonies. Is that true?
That's very true. I was so shy to the extreme that I will be playing a semi-finals and thinking at one point, oh, if I win, I will have to speak in the finals. So many times I will make myself lose, so I didn't have to confront that moment. Crazy.
And how did you overcome that?
Well, because I think with time, it was stronger and bigger, the fact that I wanted to become, you know, one of the best tennis players in the world. So I needed to forget about that. I needed to focus on my tennis and forget about that. And my personality was becoming more to the outside. I was still shy, but not so much. I remember I tried, I was working with a psychologist also to help me sort things out and overcome this shyness that I had. So yeah, I was becoming a more mature person also.
Was your shyness holding back your tennis?
At moments, I don't think it did. I think these particular moments where I didn't want to reach the finals, this was more in the beginning. It didn't last too long. So I think I would say that it helped me to get rid of my shyness, you know, becoming more popular, growing up. And I think tennis helped me a lot with my personality.
What else did you learn from working with the psychologist?
Well, tennis is so mental, you know, and sometimes it was hard for me to put away things about my personal stuff or this kind of personality. It was hard to put it away on the court. And so that was one thing. Another thing that helped me a lot is to deal with the pressure, with the media. In Argentina, you know, the pressure, people are very passionate, so the pressure starts to become quite high, and the expectations, and when I was doing well, they wanted me to do better. And so it was a tough time for me in the beginning. So the psychologist, yeah, helped me a lot on that.
Is there something to learn about the international nature of tennis, in that you have to be able to deal with not just packing everything into a suitcase, not knowing which week you're going to be where, having to switch languages, dealing with different media? Is there something that actually affects your level of play that is all about getting comfortable with the internationalness of tennis?
Actually, no. I think on my side, I felt that helped me. I like that life. And I always say that one of the best things that happened to me in tennis is the fact that I was able to travel, to get to know different cultures, different places, get to know people. So I think that helped me a lot. It was part of the whole career. And if playing tennis meant that I had to travel every week and pack and go here and there, I would have done it anytime.
So you were like that anyway. Were you an adventurer as a little girl?
Nah, more or less. I was not so adventurous. I think this has had more to do with the tennis. That tennis took me to all these places. And I think I learned to be adventurous when I started to travel and play tennis.
We've talked about how quick your rise was from your first junior tournament to semi-final at Roland Garros at 15. At 18, you won the Wimbledon doubles. You won the WTA end-of-year championships. When you think back to that time, do you think that you expected to achieve certain things in your career? Did you have an expectation that you could win, you know, a few more Grand Slam titles, singles, doubles? Or were you just riding the crest of a wave?
Yeah, I mean, I had expectations that I could win more Grand Slams. But at the same time, I could have not won any. So... But yeah, I had those expectations, you know, that I will win more Grand Slams. Being in the top five for many years, you know, I was so close many times. I reached three finals, three Grand Slam finals, being very close to win more than one. So, and I beat pretty much all of the players. So I knew I had the level, I had the skills to win more Grand Slams. So, yeah, my expectations were there.
You were one of the most photographed players of your era, and obviously you had plenty of commercial deals, you know, eventually in the cosmetics world. Did you enjoy the attention, or was it a bit of a distraction?
No, I always enjoyed it. People always ask me if that bothered me, and not at all. I always enjoyed that part. I thought that was... that had more to do with the personal side, which I also enjoyed it. You know, it was not only tennis, but I had the opportunity to work with perfumes, for example, to make my own perfumes. So that's a side that I always enjoyed it. It kind of took me away from the tennis, and I always liked that.
So that wasn't a problem that you had to deal with. It was just something you enjoyed.
No, it was not a problem at all. It was something that it added in a positive way to my career.
Let's go back to 1988. You were the last person standing between Steffi Graf and first the Grand Slam and then the Golden Slam. How was the pressure different for you in those two finals?
I felt pressure, but I knew Steffi had this opportunity and she was going to go for it. But I tried to take it away from her and play, you know, my best tennis. But, you know, on the other side was Steffi and she was always tough. So, yeah, it was a three-set match, I remember, at the U.S. Open. And then I remember after that we played the Olympics in Seoul, which, again, we play another final, which she won again. So, yeah, it was always tough to play Steffi, you know. It was always a challenge and hard to figure out how to win or to beat her.
But, I mean, she was obviously the story then because she was going for the Grand Slam and the Golden Slam, and you were the person who was supposed to spoil the party. But, of course, you had your own agenda. You know, it was your ambition as well. Was it easy to play for your own aims, or was it also easy to get caught up in the moment of history that she was trying to make?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, I had that in my mind that it was she had this opportunity, and on the other hand, I thought, but I also have the opportunity to take it away from her. So it was in my mind, and I played with that in mind and tried to do my best. I was close, but I couldn't take it away from her.
Okay, let's jump 2 years to the US Open in 1990. But let's build up to that, because obviously the big question is, what was different in the US Open final of 90 as against 88? But earlier in the year, you had split from your longtime coach, Angel Jimenez, and taken up with Carlos Kiermaier. What did Carlos give you that you hadn't had up to that point?
Yeah, I think the difference is there. Carlos Kiermaier was very important in my tennis career. I think one thing that was crucial is that he tried to bring out the personal, my personal life, you know, into place, you know, like if I had a dream or I wanted to achieve something on my personal side, he encouraged me to do it. And by doing that, he took away the pressure a lot from tennis. And that's how I got into this US Open final in 1990. You know, I think I was more relaxed, more focused on the tennis, but not with that pressure that I used to feel.
How did he use the personal to take away the pressure? I mean, can you give me any examples of what he did?
If there were things that I like to do, for example, I don't know, just riding a horse on the beach, for example, or get into this horse carriage that takes you to the club, you know, let's do that. Or I like to ride motorcycles, and I remember he said, let's take the motorcycle to this tournament and you know, you can ride it afterwards. I like to play some soccer, and we would play soccer before the matches, things like that.
So were you almost too professional in the time before you started working with him?
I don't know if it's too professional, but I think you only have one side of the story, you know, like you're focusing too much on the tennis, you know, and you kind of forget the personal side, which I think it's you know, in parallel, it's going also needs to, you need to put attention to that. You need to grow as a person. So I don't know if today I have to give an advice to an athlete, I would say, don't stop doing things you like to do. On the other hand, I think it's healthy. I think it will take away the pressure on your career, and you learn something new, something different. It will be more healthy for your mind.
Did you hire Carlos because you wanted him to help you with that, or was that just what he did? He identify that as the thing that you needed most?
No, I didn't know Carlos from before. I knew he was he used to be a great tennis player in Brazil and worldwide, but I didn't know him. And I think he discovered all those things as when he started to meet me and to get to know me. He realized that I needed to release, he needed to release a little bit of that pressure.
Because you started that year with a bad injury. You had to leave the centre court at the Australian Open in a wheelchair, and you missed, what, nearly 2 months. Did that give you thinking time about where you were going in your career?
Not really. I was thinking that the only thing I was thinking is, when am I going to get back? You know, when am I going to be right, healthy again? Fortunately, it was not a serious injury, so I was able to start again after 2 months, and eager and hungry to start playing on the tour again.
So when did you first feel the benefits in your tennis of Carlos's encouragement to be more of yourself?
I mean, the key moment was the US Open, obviously, when I won the US Open. That was the highlight and the best moment of my career. Then I remember I played Hilton Head, Amelia Island. I won those tournaments. Then I won Rome. I won quite a lot of tournaments in that time, that period of time that I was with Carlos.
But when you went into the US Open final, I mean, your head-to-head against Steffi was 18-3 for her. She'd won the first 11 of your matches, and you'd never beaten her at a major. What was it that you overcame that day to beat her?
Well, fortunately, after all those games that I lost, made me learn or start to realize how to play Steffi. And I think when I got to the US Open, I felt like I knew how to play against her, how to beat her. I kind of realized which strategy will work to beat her, and it actually worked. I was successful in it, and I think that's why I was able after to beat her so many times.
Yeah, because when you look at the score, 6-2, 7-6, that doesn't quite tell the story, because you served for the match of 5-4. Lost two games and then had to save set points. What did you learn about yourself at that moment?
I knew that I it was a match that if I could win it in two sets, it was going to be better for me, because I remember I had a three-set match the day before against Mary Jo Fernandez. So I didn't know how I was going to feel physically going into a third set. So I really tried to push myself to finish the match in two sets. But I had it, and then it went away, and then I had it again in the tiebreak. I was close, and I remember just telling myself, come on, you have to close it now, you have to close it now, and this is what happened, fortunately.
What was the feeling afterwards?
Wow, it was amazing. It's hard to describe the feeling. You know, it's like all the years in my career just, you know, close into that moment. You know, I went through all those years, and I said, you know, this is why all the work, the sacrifice, you know, it paid off. Here is the answer.
At the time, you didn't know it was going to be your only Grand Slam. You were 20. There was very good reason to think you might have won more. Do you look at it differently now, knowing it was your only one?
Yes, of course. I mean, I'm happy that I was able to win a Grand Slam. There are no regrets. I think all you can ask from yourself is to give your best. And I did. I answered that question. So I'm happy with that. Obviously, you analyze a lot of things, you know, as far as your as personality, your tennis career, why of many things. But yeah, the end result is that I'm very happy with what I did and with my career.
10 months after that U.S. Open, you played Steffi again in the Wimbledon final. It was almost a reverse, because you'd won the previous five matches against her, and then you lost a long final set. What do you think got away?
Well, what a match that was. Yeah, I remember going through that match after to see what happened. I was so close. Again, having Steffi on the other side, you know that the match is not over until the last point, and this is what happened. I was just a few points away from winning the match, from winning Wimbledon for the first time, but I was not thinking about that. I remember when I started that tournament, Wimbledon, I was not playing very well. I was feeling the pressure. I had a conversation with my coach after the first match and said, I cannot continue playing like this. I'm not feeling comfortable. I'm not feeling well. And we tried to make a psychologist analysis and decided to change certain things, and which I did. And I started to play great level of tennis. And I started to win match by match until I got to the finals. I beat Jennifer Capriati in the semifinals. And then here I am against Steffi. And again, I played an excellent match. I gave it all. It was an unbelievable match. I was just too close. So there are no regrets. I did everything I could. I gave it all. And it just wasn't on my side.
What did you change to get your form back?
I changed the way I was thinking. You know, my coach said, you have to play like this. Don't worry if it doesn't work. Just stick to this plan.
So it was tactical rather than finding a beach where you could ride a horse?
It was tactical but psychological at the same time. So he said, just rely on me and play like this. I don't want you to do anything else. And this is how I did. So I said, okay, I'm going to do whatever you're saying that I should do. And if it doesn't work, it's your fault. But it did work. It did work.
And did you get that sense as you went through the draw that actually it was nice just to be told what to do and not to have to think too much?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. No, that conversation was quite important because I think I was not going to be able to win too many matches.
When you look at the pictures of the trophy ceremony there, you look actually very happy. Is that just you being a dignified loser, or did you realise right at the end that actually you had got as much out of that tournament as you could reasonably expect?
I think I was happy because of this change we made. I think it was the first time I made such a big change. And to think that I was there in the finals and I almost won that match, just thinking that after the first match I played at that Wimbledon, I was happy.
Forgive me for raising another defeat, but players often say they learn more from defeats than victories. In the quarterfinals at Roland Garros in 1993, you led Mary Jo Fernandez 6-1, 5-1, 40-30, and the clock behind you said 58 minutes. And yet you ended up losing 10-8 in the third set after more than 3.5 hours. You'd had 5 match points. How easy was that result to deal with? In fact, I mean, how did you deal with it?
That was probably one of the hardest matches I ever had to overcome. Because, like you said, I was so close to winning the match. What I didn't like was the feeling I started to get to finish the match. I was just not able to close it out. And that frustration, that feeling was not nice, and I think that was what bothered me the most. And when I finished the match and I lost, it took me, I would say, a few weeks to recover from that match. But not for the match itself, for the result, but for the feeling I had.
You said a few minutes ago that it's hard to describe feelings in words. We were talking about a great feeling then after you'd won the US Open. Can you describe this feeling at all or give any indication about what it was?
It was frustration, annoying, like unhappy, all those feelings, which were not very nice. I think in tennis, yeah, you have these moments in... The job is after to work on them and try to get out of them somehow. But it's hard because sometimes you can't find the answers that easily, because I was doing everything right. And it was just a feeling I had. It was not something I was doing as far as strategy or I changed the game, or it was just a feeling that I had. And that's very hard to deal with.
Did you get a sense afterwards, if I'd done this, it might have been better? Or if there was there a way to deal with the feeling? Or was it one of those days where somehow you were not going to win?
I tried everything. I mean, when I had those feelings, I tried different options. I tried through strategy. I tried to come to the net to play different ways. I tried all kinds of things, and I couldn't get out of that situation. So that was difficult. That was hard, because you always find the way, perhaps. And it was not something that Mary Jo was doing. It was something I was feeling inside of me.
And if you were sitting out alongside the Gabriella Sabatini at 23 years old now and could say something to her when she came down your end of the court, would you say anything in particular?
No, not really. Not really. Not really, because it was something I felt at that moment. And like I said, I tried everything. And if there is something I could say now, it's, yeah, try to get out of that situation by doing something different. I don't know. Maybe something that doesn't have to do with the strategy, but something with an attitude, perhaps. Try to change it. Do something crazy. I don't know. To cut this moment.
Yeah, fair enough. It's hard, I know. Yeah. You spent 508 consecutive weeks in the world's top 10. That's 9 years and 9 months, which is a phenomenal achievement. Can you say it was fun throughout, or were there times when you had to try and rediscover the fun you had as a little girl who just, from the first day, loved to hit tennis balls?
No, it has. It's times. I mean, it's not fun all the time. I mean, there are moments that are difficult. When you are there, you don't realize that, yeah, you are staying in one place for such a long time. But yeah, it's a great achievement. But yeah, the price is very high that you have to pay to stay up there. But the fact that I was able to stay up there, I think it talks a lot about my mental work, or everything I was working on. You know, I was in the right direction. And to have that stability, it's probably the hardest thing, because I think it's easier to reach to that point. But then to stay there, it's the most difficult one.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I asked the question is that there are little boys, little girls playing tennis and other sports around the world, and they will dream of playing on the biggest courts, and only very few of them end up doing so. And when they get there, they've often lost that sense of fun that made them pick up the racket in the first place. And I was wondering whether you have any advice for how you keep not the sense of fun the whole time, because that's impossible, but just that sense of, yes, this is what I always wanted to do as a child. I'm living the dream, even through the difficult times.
This is the advice I would give: to not play tennis. Obviously, put that passion and love and everything that comes with it. If you have passion and love, then everything is possible. But on the other side, I will say not to lose your desires as a person. You know, put time into that. You know, if you like reading, if you like music, just put time into that. I think it's very healthy, and it will take away all this pressure, because all this path just consumes you. It takes you, without knowing, it takes you to all this pressure and to forgetting what tennis used to be, a joy. And you forget about that, you know. At some point, you lose that. You don't know when that happens, but at some point, it happens. So it's healthy to first try to stay away from the media, from the news that, you know, you get about you, and focus on things you like to do. I think that will be the healthiest thing you could do.
Very wise. Were you aware of being an icon, both for Argentina and for women and girls, by being such a globally recognised figure from Argentina?
I never realised, or that was not my intention or my objective, to to become something like that. My objective was to play tennis and to become the best at it and do everything I had to do to achieve those things, but never to become an icon or someone to Argentina. When I stopped playing tennis, I realized how much I gave to people, by getting all this love and these messages that people give me or telling me you were an inspiration to me. Wow, I realize how much I have done, and that is the most beautiful thing I could get.
Would you have done anything different if you had been more aware of being an inspiration, being a role model as a player, or do you think your impact was because you weren't aware of it?
No, I was who I was. I follow my dream and what I wanted, and I will do the same.
You retired at the age of 26, retired as a player, I should say, which seems very young. Do you regret stopping so early, or having reached the Roland Garros semis at 15, were you ready to stop at 26?
I was 26, but I felt like 40, 50. I felt like I was on the tour for a long time, and I couldn't continue. I was just, I don't know what the world will be, but fatigue, burnout. I just couldn't take it anymore. I from the first moment I started to feel that I was not having fun, you know, waking up in the morning and thinking I have to go to train, and thinking I don't want to do this, I don't want to go and train, I don't want to play tennis. From the first moment I started to feel this, I said something is happening here. And I worked with a psychologist to figure out what was happening. Is this a moment that I'm going through, or is it really that I don't want to play anymore? So the psychologist really took me to the limit to find out where I was, what was happening. And I realized that this is it. You know, this is, I don't want to play tennis anymore. I don't want to start hating tennis. I mean, it gave me so much, and I don't want to have this feeling for tennis.
Did you rediscover the joy of tennis after stopping as a professional?
Yes, I did. Of course, I didn't play tennis for I don't know how many years, maybe for 10 years. I didn't touch a racket.
10 years?
Yeah, I don't know if it was 10 years, but more or less.
So you weren't tempted to come back after 3 years of a break?
No, not at all. I had such a relief when I decided to stop playing tennis. And the fact that I had control of my time, I could do whatever I want, I could travel to places I've never been. I was so happy and enjoying life. And this is actually what I wanted, just to become a regular person who does, you know, the same thing that as everybody else. And I was so happy with that I when I worked with the psychologist, I took the time because it's a process, you know. I play tennis most of my life, so I have to make sure that this is, you know, what is happening and that I really want to stop playing tennis. So it took me a long time. It was not a decision from one day to another. So I think that's why I never thought of playing tennis again or regretted the decision.
How long did it take you to work out?
It took me a year and a half, at least.
Right, it's a long time.
Long time, yes. Yeah, that's the time I think I needed. When I said, I'm ready now to stop.
You've done a lot of charity and benefit work, in particular through the United Nations, since your playing days. Also promoting sport for disabled people. Do you see that just as part of giving back to a sport that served you well, or do you think you'd have always have done that regardless of the profile you have?
If I have the opportunity to do it, I will do it. It doesn't matter if I was a tennis player or whatever I was. If I have the opportunity, I will do it. It's something that it gives you back so much joy, you know. It's something nice to do, to be able to help others.
It sounds to me like you're somebody who would have been very happy as a champion in a sport that had a much lower profile than tennis, because the passion was playing the sport, and having to deal with all the fame and the media was just part of the package. It came with it. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, that's my kind of personality, you know, that everything I do is through passion, through love, whatever I do. I don't think there is any other way for me to do it. And I have to put all my energy in it. And so if I'm not interested 100%, it will be too hard to do it. So, the passion has always, you know, has to be there.
In 2006, you were inducted into the International Tennis Hall of Fame. What did that mean to you?
One of the best moments of my career, you know, to that your colleagues vote you people to be able to be part of the tennis history. It's something you always dream of. You know, I'm now in the history of tennis.
What do you remember about your induction weekend?
It was wonderful. I had a great time. It was my first time to Newport, and the tennis club is just wonderful. The people, all the ceremony was just so cozy and so loving. And so special. I remember I asked Steffi Graf to present me, which was even more special. We became good friends, a little bit when we were playing, but even more when we retire. So it was very special for me that she was there.
Because she's another one who would be very happy in a low-profile sport. She didn't like all the attention either.
Yeah, that's why I say that it was very special that she accepted my invitation, because I know she doesn't like those things. But I was quite honored that she was there.
Now, we normally finish these interviews by asking what sort of advice you would give people. And you've given a lot of advice during the interview, in particular about getting people to enjoy the things outside tennis that's important. But if you have youngsters who ask you, how do I get to the top? Or if you have parents saying, what can I do for my child who's good at tennis? What advice are you comfortable giving?
No, to the kids who start playing, just the same thing. I mean, I think we all know what it takes to get up there, you know, just the sacrifice, the passion, the determination. I think it's important also to set goals, but achievable goals, you know, like short-term goals. That's important too, because, you know, you're working towards something, and that will help you. And to the parents, just to respect the child, to give them freedom in whatever they want, and encourage them and try to be beside them, but just be a father, don't be anything else.
Gabriella Sabatini, thank you so much for sharing your recollections, memories and words of wisdom with us.
Thank you, a pleasure.
Gabriella Sabatini really is as charming as she sounds, and if you remember her from her playing career, she looks very much the same these days. There was a lot there about how we can all learn to be thankful for what we have, rather than regretting the things that got away. That interview with Gabriella Sabatini completes Season 2 of the Tennis Worthy podcast, but Season 3 is already in preparation, and you can listen back to any of the past podcast interviews from the first two seasons that you may have missed, or listen again for a second time. There's always something new you can pick up. And if you've enjoyed these interviews, do spread the word to friends, family and others, and tell them where to find the interviews. The Tennis Worthy podcast is brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame in association with the Tennis Radio Network. I'm Chris Bowers. Thanks for listening. And join us again for more in-depth interviews with the legends of tennis.